Men, when we leave the house, it's phone, wallet, keys, how's my hair look? But if you're experiencing hair loss, you may not be so confident when you step outside your door. It's time to get that confidence back and restore your hair with Hims. No man wants to lose his hair, but for men, it's actually quite common. And now with Hims, the solution is simple. Try Hims Hair Loss Solutions and you'll be joining hundreds of thousands of subscribers who got their flow back. Men, real talk. The only thing worse than losing your hair is waiting forever for it to grow back. That's why you need Hims, and you can start seeing your hair grow back in as little as 3 to 6 months. Hims provides access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple, with doctor-trusted treatment options and clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. They offer personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatment options, so you can find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online. Just answer a few questions and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to your door. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, so if you feel like you're losing a part of yourself with your hair loss, get Hims and get your confidence back. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Results vary based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
What's up, Open Floor Globe? I'm your host, Michael DePod Pina, and I'm joined on the other line by my good friend, Sports Illustrated staff writer, Rohan Nadkarni. Rohan, I have to be honest.
Okay.
Last night was Succession season finale, and one of the great disappointments in my life is that you do not watch this show, because Monday morning, it's all I can think about, and so you not coming along on the ride with me has been hard to deal with, and I just wanted to let you know and our listeners know how much you've let me down over these past 9 weeks.
You know, I'm not really one that's here to say an eye for an eye or anything along those lines, but when I was trying to, like hire you a raft to get to Love Island with me, you refused to take it. You wouldn't go on the Love Island ride with me. No love for my homies, Tommy Fury, Mora, all the rest of the gang from season 5, Curtis. Who could forget Curtis? So, you know, I think that we both clearly have our blind spots, and I think that's okay. We just have to embrace our differences.
I think one of these shows, completely consumed popular culture in this
country.
Yeah,
and it's Love Island.
Sure. No, okay, yeah, I know. Yeah, 100%. I can't argue with you. well, when you catch up, we're going to have a special Succession rewatch episode or something like that. I can't wait. Okay, so on today's show, we'll be previewing the top players who become trade eligible this week and what it means for this season's transaction window. We'll also dig into the mailbag to debate the league's best third wheels, the free-falling Pistons, and maybe some Rip City Royston report action if there's enough time. But first, a quick reminder to our wonderful listeners to please keep the emails coming, openfloormail@gmail.com. That's openfloormail@gmail.com. Rohan, as I just said, we were supposed to start with some trade talk. And we'll get to that in just... jump in.
Can I just even supersede whatever we're going to talk about? I just have a little mini rant or take I need to get off my chest.
Okay, beautiful.
So, Mike, I was traveling for work last week, and I'm sure if and when that story comes out, we can discuss the entirety of that trip because, you know, I have some good stories, et cetera, some fun stuff from reporting last week. But I just want to say, why are NBA games so loud? Why is the in-game production of an NBA game not changed in the last 25 years? Every stadium is too loud. I'm tired of big waving flags with your team's logo on them. That does nothing for me. Don't you think there's like a market inefficiency for one NBA team to be like, you know what? We're going to make our games a nice, fun place for adults and families to enjoy a good time watching basketball without loud horns and music and bells. And don't even get me started on like what's going on with team dancers, which just really makes no sense in the 21st century in a lot of ways. It's being executed right now. I just have a lot of issues with it, and I think it's like genuinely a bad product, and maybe people would go to more NBA games if they weren't so loud and annoying.
This is I have a lot of thoughts about this. I agree, first of all, that they're way too loud. I do not enjoy the volume of whatever it is that is just blaring from the sound system and the PA.
It's like we can't have a single quiet timeout to like turn over and talk to your friend if you came to the game. Like
I tried to transcribe an interview at a recent Nets game with noise canceling headphones, and I couldn't do it. So I don't even like that is just I know that's like a very small problem in the grand scheme of the universe, but I was just like, this is like when I'm 75, 80 years old, I will be deaf because of attending these NBA yes. games. And I will say some arenas are louder than others, and it's not crowd noise. The one arena yes. I want to shout out one arena and shout out in a negative light. Quicken Loans.
You're not calling them in. You're calling them out.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Quicken Loans in Cleveland, miserable. Covering the finals there for years. You know, maybe Cleveland gets back there this year. Who knows what's going on right now? But I did not enjoy being there.
Yeah. I found Clippers games to be too loud. I mean, I just think that I'm being serious. I know it sounds like I'm coming up with a joke, but in all seriousness, I think there's like just a better way to do this for all fans. I'm curious, like maybe your emailers go away differently. We'll get a bunch of emails about how they love it, but I think there's like a huge opportunity to like put on a quieter game. And I think fans will then get louder for the big moments when you really need them to. But this idea that you're like hyping everyone up by playing these insanely loud things during every timeout. Let me ask one more quick question, because you mentioned transcribing at this Nets game. I had to do an interview from the airport last week, and as I was interviewing this player for my story, I told him, I apologize, it might be a little loud. I'm doing this interview from the airport, but I'm really committed to getting this done. And they said, I'm really committed too. I'm right there with you, which was very reassuring. but I'm just curious if you've what strange places you've had to conduct interviews from.
Wow. You know, as you were just saying, the airport, that's where I conducted my interview with Trae Young for that cover story.
Really?
I interviewed basically everyone on the team in person. He was in LA, I want to say, not with the team at the time at the practice facility. And it was very stressful. It almost was conducted in the security line. And I was like, I can't. Like, I was just, it was very anxiety inducing. I managed to get through security and just park myself in a very quiet part of the airport, there is no quiet part of the airport. That was very difficult.
There's no quiet part of the airport. Charlotte's airport, the Charlotte's airport was.
You outed yourself.
Yeah, I did. So, but the person who I interviewed for this story from the Charlotte airport, like nothing to do with Charlotte.
No, not related.
Yeah. So that's what made it a little goofy. I also, but they have a great airport. Shout out to the airport. It's big. I once did an interview from a concert, but I think the opener was playing. So I was able to like walk outside and do the interview. It was Kenyon Martin. And there's like, They're like, he's waking up from surgery or something earlier today. We'll give you a call later. And I was like, I'm going to be at this concert. And they said, all right. I had to do it from Forest Hill Stadium. Like, outside, I went up and sat on a hill, had my headphones in, and took notes furiously on my phone.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Wonderful. So can we get back to – actually, real quick, before we get back to what we were going to talk about. On the noise front, they did this in Madison Square Garden a few years ago. I don't know if you remember, but Draymond Green was
the
not
no music
happy.
Game. Well, yeah. There's a fine line between no music at all and – or not a fine line. There's a big gap between no music at all and what they're doing right now. I don't think we need no music at all, but it's really just like the timeout entertainment and like – it just is like, yeah, we've seen all of this before. Try something new.
Yes. We do not have to come up with these new ideas. Thank goodness we can just complain. So that's where we'll leave it.
I'll gladly come up with that. I'm telling you, any NBA team, consult with me. We'll get your game days way more popular.
Small six-figure sum fee
yeah.
for that service, and we'll get it done. Yeah. I agree. Okay. So, Rohan, we were supposed to start with trade talk, and again, we'll get to that in just a little bit. But this morning, there was a report in The Athletic that suggests there's some optimism that Brooklyn Nets point guard Kyrie Irving will return to the team this season. I don't want to linger on this topic too long because nothing is concrete, but what do you think Kyrie's return would mean? And just what was your reaction to this pseudo news item?
Well, my initial reaction was still largely confusion because I believe in the story it says it's unclear if his return will be because he gets vaccinated or the vaccine requirements will be lifted. And I was like, how can there be optimism unless there's optimism that he's getting the vaccine? Because if there's optimism that he's going to return just because the rules might change, that's not really optimism. That's just like, hey, like maybe the rules will change. Like that to me, I don't understand how that's different from, you know, the beginning of the season. Unless, you know, Shams also reports that he's been talking to Kevin Durant a lot lately and those conversations appear to have been positive. So I'm still largely mm-hmm. confused because unless there's actual optimism that he's going to get vaccinated, which at the end of the day, that's the goal, right? At the end of the day, it's to get as many people vaccinated, boosted as possible. Like, that would be great news. I would celebrate that not just because of the return of a great basketball player, but because eventually something got through to him that he realized how important it is to get the vaccine. But that's what I didn't understand about the story, why it didn't mention, like, is he going to get vaccinated or not? I mean, that's really ultimately the question here, and the story doesn't really come down on that hard in either way. I mean, I think we all know what's at stake if he returns. This team goes from a contender, the arguable favorite right now. I think that they have as good a shot as any to win the title, but their margin of error is not that big. And I think if Kyrie comes back, they are the favorite. I think that they are the favorite if he comes back. That's what's at stake.
I agree. They would definitely be the favorite if he comes back. And a way to kind of tie this, well, first I should say, I agree that he kind of needs to get vaccinated if he's going to play this season. Yeah. The other thing would just be, I guess, if the Nets changed their tune and were like, yeah, no, we don't have to get vaccinated. You can come back and play on the road. Don't think that's going to happen. That would make no sense. And incoming mayor Eric Adams in New York, he's not going to change this mandate because the variant is like running through New York City. Like he's just not going to lessen.
Yeah. I mean, the variant if he did, running through the NBA psychotic. Right now. Yeah, yeah.
So I mean, that would just make absolutely
Chris,
no sense.
Yeah, you and Chris talked about it last week, obviously. But the way, you know, we've seen the health and safety protocols, quote unquote, wreak havoc on the league. All these guys seemingly testing positive or close contacts, etc. Like the league also can't, I don't think, can afford to have someone as publicly unvaxxed as Kyrie soaking up all that oxygen right now because they have their own problems. So, yeah, to me, it's still he has to get vaccinated. Until I think there's more clarity on that, I'm still just a little bit skeptical. But I guess we'll see. I mean, I'm sure the people who talk to Shams have a reason to feel optimistic.
So, theoretically, I want to say that if we were to tie this into the trade discussion that we're about to kind of dive into, I wonder if either news of Kyrie's imminent return or his actual return, I wonder like what impact that would have on the trade market. Like Irving on the Nets totally recalibrates the NBA hierarchy. It makes like Harden will just look a lot better. Durant will look somehow better. He's great. Kyrie is a great basketball player. They would just be by like you're looking around the league right now, and then we don't know besides the Warriors.
I think the only team who would compete with full strength and answer the Warriors at full strength.
They would definitely be up there. Yeah, they'd be competitive. I would probably still think that the Nets are a better team and more dangerous. But I just wonder if like it would impact.
I mean,
and, like,
you refuse to admit how dangerous the Warriors are, but that's it.
I do. That is fake news. I do not do that. I respect the Golden State Warriors. If he were to come back, like I just wonder if that would make teams in the Eastern Conference, in particular, just less aggressive than they otherwise would have been. Like a team like the Raptors or the Celtics that would maybe talk themselves into being a buyer, just like either punting or being a seller. Like I don't know if that would actually be that powerful, but it would just be interesting.
I mean, even the good teams, right? If you're Phoenix, do you still kind of make a push your chips to the table kind of move if you're really nervous? I don't know. I really don't know. I think it would be interesting. I do, just going back to Nets Warriors, I think I might pick the Warriors at full strength in that series. And that's obviously we have not seen Clay, but the Nets depth is looking a little shaky this year. I mean, Blake Griffin was, I once again found myself watching highlights from game 7 of the Bucks Nets series last June, which is still
why were you watching highlights of that game?
I just love watching highlights from old NBA games. Yesterday I did I did the 2006 West Finals game 7 Spurs Mavs San Antonio at home. That's the one where San Antonio's trailing the whole way. They go up 3. Manu fouls Dirk.
That's earmuffs to the Spurs fans out there.
That is, Dirk was insane. So I just love, and I was watching that game, and I mean that's also just a great like hinge moment in NBA history is that game 7. So I really like the Warriors' depth right now, and I don't want to turn this into a Nets Warriors finals preview, but I'm just throwing that out there. I think the Warriors have constructed a really good team around their 3 stars.
They are very good. I would still take the Nets pretty easily, actually.
Wow, it's not easily for me.
This is a conversation we will have in greater depth, I'm sure. /when Kyrie actually comes back, and that'll be fun.
True.
The NBA is better when the best players play basketball. That's my stance on that. Okay, moving on. Later this week on December 15th, we're recording this on December 13th, just a whole bunch of players who were not trade eligible become trade eligible. And I don't know how much activity this will actually spark, but that's kind of what we're going to talk about. Like the trade deadline is February 10th, so it's not for a while. But just like looking at this season's big picture, Rohan, the December 15th, it's not a deadline. It's just like an important date. But like it has me thinking about how active teams are going to be in this season where, as we're kind of discussing with the Kyrie thing, it's just like there's so many teams that are like in the middle. If you just look at the standings, it's a morass of average. And I just wonder, like, are we going to see an active trade season? Is it going to be a quiet trade season? Just what are your thoughts, very big picture, generally about that?
Well, the two things that to me stand out are the fact that we've had so much trade chatter in the last 10 days or so lends you to believe that there's going to be something going on not long after this kind of 15th ends like this fake moratorium on who can be traded, etc. The fact that there's been so much chatter already lends me to believe that, you know, some things are in motion. I also think something that could have an impact here is next summer is not expected to be a big free agency summer. There's not a lot of teams with cap space. There's not a lot of big stars expected to hit the market. I think that could maybe spur some action up until the trade deadline, just where this is not going to be one of those summers where teams are worried about preserving their cap space for a run at XYZ. That might help enable some movement as well. So those are a couple things that kind of stood out to me, at least in a big picture sense.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting. I think that we should keep an eye on luxury tax teams. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of teams that are like just below the tax.
Right.
And I just wonder if they'd actually cross it with like I just wonder if teams think that they how many teams actually think that they have a shot, frankly. Mm-hmm. And what teams would and like what do you want to accomplish this season also is a thing. Like are you, if you're the Celtics, like just how aggressive do you want to be? Your team is just so average. And we got a lot of emails about the Celtics, and I want to address them on a different, at a later point, frankly, when Rohan is not my co-host. But like they are, I think, like for an example, I think they're like $6 million over the tax, and they have Juancho Hernangómez making about $7 million this year. It's like I could totally see the Celtics like their only move at the deadline being we're going to attach Juancho in like 2 seconds and just ship him to Oklahoma City. It's like that. I think trades like that might be what we see. And that's that kind of bums me out, frankly. But I don't know. I'm having a difficult time getting a read beyond like the big and there could be like a Ben Simmons trade or something like that. That just completely changes the conversation. But I feel like it could be muted. I don't know. I can't really get a good read on it.
Yeah, I think it's going to be weird. I mean, I do think it's going to require kind of the big dominoes to fall first. And that, I think that being the Simmons potential trade and then seeing if the Blazers end up doing anything. I think if those moves, like if they happen, then we could get a bunch of moves after that kind of situation. I do think the... Like, GMs should never be celebrated for ducking the tax. Like, it's just something I want to throw out there. There's, like, nothing cool about that. There's nothing good about that. It's lame. Like, we should, I know, one day we should probably just dedicate something to the luxury tax and whether it's, like, actually good for the league or not.
Yeah. I mean, it's not the GM's fault. Like,
it's not, but sometimes, like, people will be like, oh, like, the maneuvering they did to get under the tax was impressive here. And it's like, I understand that the GMs aren't the ones getting the directives to, or the ones aren't the ones handing out the directives, but still, sometimes you see that where it's like, oh, good move by Oklahoma City to get under the tax. I mean, obviously they're way under the tax, but point being, the tax is dumb. It's annoying this time of year, especially for the reason you mentioned, because it just ends up with these sad trades where teams are just getting rid of guys. You know, there's teams who are trying to avoid it. You know, like the Heat could use bodies right now, but they're not signing anyone for a while because they don't want to get dip into the luxury tax yet. So it's weird. Yeah, I agree. There's kind of usually it's like a star driven kind of thing, but the Simmons situation has been so weird. And I do wonder if teams like the Suns and Bucks making finals last year is giving some people some belief, like if things break right, like we can make the finals. Because I think that we're still in a little bit of a, you know, as long as Kyrie is out, we're still in a little bit of, I think a lot of
it's
teams
like a
think
purgatory.
They have a chance. Yeah.
It's like a
but
weird
But I think a lot of teams think
right
they have
now.
A chance. I think a lot of teams think they have a chance at the same time.
It's a knife's edge. It's really fascinating. Yeah. We'll see how it plays out. There's a lot of time between then. Getting back to December 15th, which is the peg here, we had a question. It's kind of inspired by a Thaddeus email. Thaddeus, for everyone who listens, is our most dedicated and frankly impressive emailer, writing book-length notes
tomes
to us,
yeah,
that are very detailed and beautiful, yeah, and wonderful. He sent one in recently, and I kind of took it and reframed it a bit for the purpose of this discussion. And I want to ask you, Rohan, Like, tell me three players who become trade eligible on December 15th who you either think will be traded or just that you want to see get traded. And the list of players is very long, and I sent you a link to all of them, and we don't need to recount all of them. So I just want you to pick three and start with one who you just want to see moved or you think will be moved.
So first of all, just to clarify, the people who become trade eligible on December 15th are people who were free agents this last summer, right?
Yes.
The fact that you expect to pick three names from the list of players is like, bro, there's not three interesting names on this list. I hate to break it to you.
I disagree.
And there's one that I could have picked, but it was like just so obvious that it wouldn't have even been interesting. Like, if I said Norm Powell, like, who am I helping by mentioning his name on this podcast? Like, Norm Powell hasn't been in 100 fake trades already. So, I have two names for you. Do you want me to give them both or just one right now?
Please give me one.
I'm being serious, but I think Dennis Schroeder is a really interesting name on this list. And it's for the exact reasons you mentioned with the Celtics and what they might do with the Juancho contract, for example. If they want to get out from under the tax, I think he's making around $5.9 million. That gets them very close. Schroeder is going to be – he's probably – they can't really probably afford to keep him in the summer because they won't have his bird rights. Theoretically, he should get offered something closer to the market value he thought he had as a free agent last year. And as you mentioned, like, they've been struggling. Obviously, Jaylen Brown, like, continues to miss time, which is not helping things. But, yeah, I mean, I think he is – if you're really looking for interest or intrigue, he's the most interesting name because not only of what he could – how much he could maybe help the team that acquires him, but also what it says about where the Celtics think they're at. So I think he's definitely, like, the most interesting name on the list by far.
So, okay, real quick, just to backtrack 1 second – not to get too deep into the minutiae of the CBA, but your Norman Powell example, there are some players who are not trade eligible until January 15th. And I honestly, we just aren't going to get into why, but he is in that bucket of player. But yes, but what you said generally holds true, that if you signed a contract, there's someone that you're eligible December 15th. Okay, so Schroeder is on my list. And look, this gets back to, are the Celtics good? Who knows? haven't really seen them at full health, full strength yet. Jaylen Brown has been battling a hamstring injury all season, basically. When he has played, he hasn't looked like an all-star. And there's just a lot of inconsistencies with this basketball team, and what you could get for Schroeder would be an interesting thing to kind of float around if you're Brad Stevens. And I don't know what his market value is. I don't know, or should say his trade value is. I don't know, for a team that is again, just over the luxury tax, there is incentive there to shed that salary, but obviously it's really tricky when you have to bring back salary. So will they package him with someone else to take back lesser salary? Like, I don't know. He's been really important for them. He's been really good. I think that if you are a team, like, the other question is, like, what team out there would look at Dennis Schroeder and be like, we really need Dennis Schroeder. Like, we really need this guy to push us over the top.
I mean, I could think of a lot of teams that could use him on that salary. I mean, if you're the Suns, I mean, campaigns had a lot of success for them. They got Landry Shamet in the offseason, but, I mean, maybe you trust a guy like Schroeder more in a playoff series. I think I would trust him more than campaign, even though as good as Payne has been for that team. We know he can play well with CP3 as he did in Oklahoma City. I mean, if you're the Bulls, I mean, the Bulls have a lot of great backcourt depth. But, I mean, Caruso's not a traditional backup point guard. Could they use another ball handler? So, I mean, I definitely think there are teams that could find a way to fit him in. I mean, even the Bucks, if they're able to put together the right salaries, if they have a couple low-priced guys they can throw at them, like, why not? Why not go get him when you theoretically wouldn't have to give up too much. I think if you give Boston a first round pick and some kind of back of the bench player, I think that's going to do it.
The Bucks is going to be tough because I don't think they can move a first round pick because of the Jrue Holiday and all the shenanigans that they've pulled. I think the Grizzlies are an interesting team, maybe, if we're trying to look at just possible destinations. You know, I like Tyus Jones, and he's played pretty well this season. Having some depth at that position could help them, I think, with Ja Morant's return TBD, although maybe he'll return sooner than later. Who knows? But yeah, it's a fascinating situation. I think that the Lakers would love to have Dennis Schroeder on their team and could have had him and chose to punt there. The Atlanta Hawks
on their team too. Yeah.
Could have had a lot of people. Yeah. And frankly, the Wizards are another team that I'm sure like to have, I think that's an upgrade over Aaron Holiday.
Yeah.
Right there. And Spencer Dinwiddie's kind of struggled this season a little bit. So Schroeder would be good there. It just goes back to what would the Celtics want back? And I just think it could get pretty complicated because I don't know what teams are going to give a first to essentially rent Dennis Schroeder or pay him a lot of money.
I'm talking myself into the Suns doing it, I think, more and more.
So, like, my thing is, how much better is Dennis Schroeder than Campaign if he even is?
Like, I think he is. I think that Payne had a great – obviously had a couple of huge playoff games for them last year. He also had a couple of no-shows. They don't have, like, a bench scorer, you know? I don't know that they have a guy that I trust. Like, really run pick and rolls, lift up the bench. It also gives them the tiniest bit of Chris Paul insurance. If he, you know, last year during the playoffs, he obviously missed time with the COVID health and safety protocols. He also got hurt a little bit in the finals. It gives them a little bit of Chris Paul insurance if you just suffer one of those nagging injuries. I don't know. I just, to me, they should be an all-in team because I don't think it's going to get, I think they're really close this year. And they may not be, with Chris Paul's age, they may not be as close next year as they are this year.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. And you look at Campaign's shooting numbers this year, not great. Maybe he bounces back. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I also don't know what, like, the Celtics would get back in a trade like that that would make it worth them participating, like Jalen Smith.
I mean,
I don't think they're getting.
I mean, if they're going to have to get a pick, then that's going to have to be it. But I mean, they could. The Suns could probably get away with trading, you know, Nader, Payton, and a first round pick for, you know, the Celtics save a little bit of money there. And yeah, I think they would. I think it would have to be something like that. And I think that Smith and Saric are going to have to probably turn into a package if they want normal price player.
Potentially. Give me your next player. You said you had two. Give me another one.
This is another one who I think could be a little interesting. I'm going Kelly Olynyk, actually, of the Detroit Pistons.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Cool. I think he's just the kind of player who plays – this sounds silly. Like, obviously, this is true for all players, but I think his talents get amplified when you put him around talent, frankly, when you put him around good players.
Sure.
He's someone who has playoff experience. He can hit threes. I think – he's just the kind of guy where I'm not going to pretend like he's a great big or great defensively or even a great rebounder, but sometimes you might encounter a matchup where you need a little bit of size and shooting. And I think that he can help a lot of teams by just soaking up some minutes, et cetera, but not gumming up your offense, et cetera. So I'm going with Kelly Olynyk.
I like that pick. I mean, he's hurt right now, we should say. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I've always been, you know, I think both of us, he's one of those players that both of us have a close relationship to.
Yes.
He spent time in Boston. He mm-hmm. spent time in Miami. You know, he's a – I think some of his value is more theoretical than actual in that you get this floor spacing big who can move off screens a little bit. He's a pretty good passer too. I think that's one of mm-hmm. his strong suits. I really don't know how much in reality he has gravity, to be honest with you, and how much is just like he'll shoot threes. But quality player, can't really play a ton of minutes in the playoff series because of some of his shortcomings. But I think Detroit is in this, you know, goes back to this ties into also just Jeremy Grant. Mm-hmm. who has been trade eligible this entire time, but he recently suffered an injury that could keep him out 6 weeks, which is a huge bummer for him and for the Pistons, because I'm sure that they want to move him at maximum value mm-hmm. on the market before the deadline. And so what couldn't the Pistons get for Kelly Olynyk is a question that, because I don't see why they would keep him, mm-hmm. frankly. I know they just signed him, but I don't know why they would want to keep him, given we'll get to the Pistons in a minute, but they're not good. And they're very, very bad, actually.
Yeah.
So I like Olynyk as a possibility there. Hopefully he gets healthy sooner than later.
Can I throw my last one at you?
Oh, you have three, you liar.
Yeah, I know. Well, there's one more that I'm – this is one that I was on the fence on, I guess. Because okay. I don't know. To me, this only happens if this team kind of gets involved in something maybe a little bit bigger somehow. But I guess I'll just say Kelly Oubre, who is signed with the Hornets over the season or over the offseason. Yeah, I don't think that he's like they're dying to move him or anything. They do have, I mean, a pretty crowded wing rotation between Bridges, Hayward, and Oubre. I think there's some overlap there, and obviously Bridges is taking a step forward. I don't think that they're dying to move him, but if they somehow get involved in something bigger, I feel like some people are wondering if they should go after, say, Simmons or Miles Turner or something like that. I mean, they have options in terms of who they could move, but he just has the kind of contract, right? It's like $13 million, I think, around roughly. So, you know,
$12 million.
Just players in that neighborhood sometimes can be the glue of a lot of deals. So just a name I'll float out. No information certainly or anything, but yeah.
That's an interesting one. He has had some ridiculous 3-point shooting games mm-hmm. this year. And
he's also had some great. He's also had some that have gone the other way. Yeah. Can I don't know if this made any rounds, but Oubre had a huge game against the Sixers about a week ago, like nuts, scoring 30 points, hit a ton of threes. And those two teams were playing again two nights later, and somebody asked Doc before the game about Oubre, and he was like, yeah, I was really hoping we were going to see first 15 games with Golden State Oubre. And I was like, well, very highly specific insult there. It was a good bit.
As you're talking right now, I want to look up to refresh my memory just what he shot from behind the 3-point line in those 15 games, because it was pretty epic.
I'm bringing it
to everyone. Yeah. Okay, so he shot 20.7% in his first 15 games from behind the 3-point line with the Warriors on 5.5 attempts per game. I remember some of those shots just painfully wide open.
Plum 3-point looks. Wide open in the corner.
So,
and then just to let everyone know what he scored against the Sixers on, it was literally a week ago, 35 points, 6 threes, 13 of 24 from the field.
Yeah, he's had the game before that, he was 6 for 10 from deep, 5 for 9.
He's had some big games.
The game
he's
before
had some
that.
Big games. Yeah.
But no, I think that's an interesting one. Again, if they were to move Kelly Oubre, I mean, the Hornets are a team that obviously wants to make the playoffs outright. And
it would be in a buyer move. Yeah, it would be in a buyer move.
So, like, they're not, like, I don't know. So you're saying that they would move him to upgrade?
Yes, yes, yes.
So then what team that's like not good would want Kelly Oubre is kind of my question there. Like, what are you doing with him on, I know his contract, like you said, $12 million this year, and then it's partially guaranteed 12.6 next year. So it's not like the greatest commitment in the world, but I don't know. I think that would be a tricky one to kind of execute.
I mean, would the Pacers so. Take him back in a Miles Turner deal? Would the Sixers take him back in a Ben Simmons deal? I could see that happening.
Maybe. I guess it's just eye of the beholder. Is that even the saying?
Yeah.
Whatever people think of when they see him, he's personally not my kind of player.
Yeah, so you don't like I'm just fun, kinda... cool people.
I did not say that. Well, I'm not going to cast those aspersions on him. I think he's a cool fellow.
You're more of a Peyton Pritchard guy.
Absolutely. Yeah, no doubt about it. Just a genius floor general. Okay. So can I give you this was my number one player okay. who I want to see traded slash I think could be, frankly. It's Kemba Walker. He's not in the rotation, and it's almost like, I don't know if you've been watching Knicks games recently, they're still bad.
Yeah, it hasn't really
and
helped.
And now they're going through, you know, they've had some unfortunate, health and safety protocols, situations recently with RJ Barrett and Obi Toppin, and who knows where this could lead, but Tibbs is just not turning to Kemba still. Quentin Grimes, their rookie, just like went off against the Bucks on Sunday on a noon start, and like I just find it fascinating that they are kind of just like, when he's out of the rotation, he's out of the rotation. That's it. So when he did play, you know, the on-offs were the on-offs. They were really bad. He also was one of the better three-point shooters in the league. And I think that there could be a team out there that looks at Kemba, looks at his contract, and is kind of like, we're not that stressed about his weaknesses at the point of attack on defense that doesn't keep us up at night. And we want to take advantage of his outside shooting and the virtuous qualities he still has as a playmaker. And maybe he'll be our backup point guard. So one team actually that I think would be interesting, and this is a team that's been in the news as a seller this whole time for a long time, is the Indiana Pacers. And I think Jeremy Lamb for Kemba Walker straight up is just like one of those trades that is kind of boring, but just like it just makes – it's neat and it just makes sense for both teams. So, yeah, thoughts on Kemba moving from New York after him being celebrated by everybody in the world when that trade went down or the signing?
I mean, I think people were excited about him – going back to New York and seeing if he could give them anything. I loved that signing for them. I think they do it 10 times out of 10 for the money they got him for, and to see, you know, if he had anything left in the tank. Like, he theoretically filled a hole that they had, which was they kind of just needed some scoring from the guard position. Obviously, it didn't work out, but it's low risk. First of all, let's talk about the Indiana Pacers for a second, because I mentioned them in another kind of thing that we do together. I don't believe they should be sellers. They've played really well when Turner, Brogdon, LeVert, and Sabonis have shared the floor. The Pacers are 10th in net rating. Do you know this? And I don't want to become one of those net rating explains everything guys, but here's some of the teams they're ahead of in net rating. Okay, the Clippers, the Sixers, the Grizzlies, the Celtics, the Hornets, the Raptors, the Nuggets. Obviously, listen,
before you move on, before you continue to make your point, can I give you my favorite net rating stat?
Sure.
And I've been trying to drop this into a conversation with you, so this is a great opportunity for me to do so. In the last 10 games of this season, the Utah Jazz are first in net rating. Where are the Golden State Warriors, Rohan, do you think?
In the last 10 games?
Yes.
Oh, well, now they've actually lost a few, huh? I'll go 12th.
They are 15th.
Okay.
14th. 14th is the New Orleans Pelicans. So I'm just going to – I'll just – you know, we'll just put a pin in that. And long-time listeners know that I'm right about everything and Rohan's wrong. Continue, Rohan.
But then, yeah, just to continue off of literally what you just said, but when you look at a bigger sample size, which I think most scientists, data scientists, math professionals would tell you, you can feel free to double-check me on this, that bigger sample sizes are better than smaller ones.
Are we sure about
and,
that?
And when you look at that, the Warriors actually have a better net rating than the Jazz when you look at it over the course of the whole season. And the Warriors are also missing their second best player. So, you know, they have help in the form of one of the greatest shooters in NBA history on the way. So just to add context to your propaganda, I thought I would just put the listeners in on that as well. But back to the Indiana Pacers. I don't think that they need to rush into making a move. I don't know that I love the Kemba swap for them. I like where your head at with the Kemba thing. I just, to me, the Knicks were a little bit of the last resort signing here. Unless he is ready to, I guess, come off the bench for Indy. And I, to me, it's just the fact that it didn't work in New York was not ideal. And I'm not entirely sure what the best role for him is right now. I mean, it sounds crazy at the same rate to think like he should be out of the league. So maybe he can give them something of a bench score, but that's why it's like, well, maybe they should be trying to getting in on Schroeder instead. You know, we don't know that he's going to be moved, but we'd rather have him than Kemba, right? So that's an interesting one, but I'm with you in terms of, I think the Pacers should be trying to do some things with this team because there is encouraging data on this side. I mean, they've been awful in close games. That tends to even out over the course of a season. So, you know, they've won three in a row entering Monday. They got Golden State Monday night, so that's not going to be easy. But I think there's some encouraging stuff.
Yeah, the Pacers are – they're interesting. We've talked – I was not anticipating all this Pacers talk on this podcast over the past week and a half, I would say. A lot of Pacers talk. So
yeah,
if you're a Pacers fan – I really hope that we finish number one on your 2022 Spotify Wrap. That's all I have to say about that. Okay, so yeah, Kemba is just he's my number one when I look at all the players here. I have another player who's pretty interesting, and I don't know if he'll. I don't think he'll get
Kemba
traded.
Was really your number one.
Well, when I'm looking at the list of players, and I'm looking at like, who can realistically be moved, who is also like pretty good and can impact something and would have some type of value. And I just think Kemba, the situation in New York is just like, it's just kind of almost bizarre to me that he's just straight up like banished, but not banished. Yeah. It's weird. I don't know. It's just, I'm watching them play now and I'm like, there's nothing solved. Like, you're still a bad team. Like, maybe play Kemba Walker. I don't know. He's like scapegoated a little bit, and it's weird. But so this other player that I've been thinking about is Tim Hardaway Jr. in Dallas.
That was a good one. That was the only other one that caught my eye. Yes.
Yeah. So he just signed a pretty big contract with Dallas in the offseason, and it is it descends annually, which is attractive, I'm sure, to anyone who would like to trade for it.
The asset fetishizers love a descending value contract. The cat gurus.
Yes, those who...
The Twitter cat gurus are high-fiving each other right now. We did it. Mission accomplished. Yeah. Isn't this like the third... This is at least the second... like 4 year, $70 million-ish contract Tim Hardaway signed, right? Like, this was the one that got him out of Atlanta in the first place.
He's a wealthy guy. Yeah, shout out to him.
I mean, it just is like funny that they were like, you know what? His value has remained exactly the same. Like, this is kind of cool.
You know, Again, this is someone who he hasn't really shot the three ball well, and you kind of mm-hmm. wonder if he's not shooting the three ball really well, what is he kind of bringing to the table? You know, a couple years ago he was at 40%. Last year he was really close to 40%. This year he's at 32% on just about the same number of attempts per game. Scoring's down. Theoretically, he's a good fit next to Luka. He's a three-point shooter. But when he's not making those threes, then what are we doing? And so I just wonder, with Dallas's season just being so topsy-turvy, like, and them really needing, like, I don't know. I think that they need draft capital, personally. I don't know if you can get that for Tim Hardaway right now, but I think that that's a name to keep an eye on. And just adding him to the rotation of a pretty good team would be interesting, and maybe he can show a little bit more in his game that he's not able to in Dallas's offense, where it's very heliocentric and Luka Doncic does basically everything with the ball in every possession. So just a name, again, just a name to keep an eye on. I think that he's pretty interesting in that regard. Any other thoughts on Tim Hardaway Jr., Rohan?
That's definitely an interesting one. I do think his shooting will rebound. I mean, you mentioned, I think he's too much of a history of being a great shooter to, I think, stay at 32% for a whole season if he doesn't come back up to 40. I think even if he's in like 36, 37 range by the end of the year, his gravity, when you talk about gravity, like, he could shoot worse than Kelly Olynyk, I think, for 3 years in a row, and he'll still have better gravity than him. So I do think teams are still going to pay attention to him on the perimeter. It's interesting for Dallas. You mentioned they need draft capital. I just can't see them making a move for draft capital right now. I think that there's a little bit of pressure on them. Maybe that's ridiculous. Maybe it's not. But I do think there's a little bit of pressure on them to win with Luka being as great as he is.
But why? Like, explain the pressure.
I think that people are entitled to believe that it's silly. At the same time, I think a lot of people believe I will say there's this. When you have Luka as good as he is right now, obviously he signed the contract extension already, but I don't know. It just becomes – a lot of teams, I think, don't want to kick the can down the road. You just never know what's going to happen. I mean, maybe they feel like they don't have a title window right now. Obviously they were close in those series against the Clippers, but I think it's fair to say that there should not be pressure on them to win right now, but maybe they feel like they need to show kind of a gesture to Luka, though. I mean, who knows how he feels? That's the thing.
Like, I just think you should just make smart decisions as a team. You should assess where you are, what you are, and then you should go from there. Like, that's just how you should function. Call me crazy. I don't know. That's just.
I don't disagree, but at the same time, it's like, they do have a deeply rich owner who should not be worried about the luxury tax. So are you really going to get someone in the draft that's as good as Tim Hardaway Jr.? Maybe?
I see what you're saying. And look, this goes back to...
And I think he's making enough money to be moved in a deal for... I don't know, somebody who could kind of help the team right now, but mixes up the energy a little bit, gives them different rotational or lineup flexibility, et cetera.
Yeah, I mean, trying to actually find a deal that makes sense is hard, so that's why I'm just throwing his name out there as someone who's intriguing. But yeah, no, I see your point for sure. Rohan, let's move on and open up the mailbag. We've spent a lot of time talking about guys who are... Dennis Schroeder is also someone who's gotten a lot of love on this podcast, a lot of airtime, more than I expected. Okay, so we have an email from Yash. And Yash, I hope I'm pronouncing your name correctly. Please let me know if I am not. But Yash writes, "Hey guys, longtime listener here. As a Warriors fan, after he got over an unspecified knee injury and vaccine resistance early on, Andrew Wiggins has been a very good two-way player, which got me wondering, is he the league's top third best player on a team? If not, who might that be? I'd love to hear your thoughts. Thanks for endlessly entertaining me. Happy holidays." Yash, Thank you. This is one of those emails that is just, I when I first read it, I thought Rohan would really appreciate it. It's a fascinating one. It's a one of those thought exercises that really has me on Basketball Reference for like 6 straight hours. And I loved it very much. So I have, I mean, I'll just say first off, I do not think that Andrew Wiggins is the best third best player on a team.
Yeah,
I don't. I'm not there yet. I think he's been pretty good to your point, but here's some names I'm just gonna throw out there that I think are definitively better, and I guess you could argue with me about it, but I think are better. Jrue Holiday. Heard of him?
Yeah, Jrue Holiday was the number one person that came to my mind. Number one.
And we're not even – Kyrie is not even a factor here, yeah. But he would certainly – or Harden, frankly. Harden might be the third best player on the team right now.
Kyle Lowry.
DeAndre Ayton, another guy who I think is better than Andrew Wiggins. Mike Conley, I think, is better than Andrew Wiggins, third best player on the Utah Jazz. Evan Mobley. First of all, you know, one of the fun things about this is like debating who the third best player is on the team.
Yeah.
When I watch Cleveland, I personally think that Darius Garland and Jared Allen are the two best players. I think those are the two best, and then I'll say Mobley is.
I don't know that third, I want Mobley over Wiggins in a playoff series just yet.
Wow. Okay. That is. That's an interesting, you know, I'm not going to like chastise you. I think that's a fun opinion to have.
I mean, honestly, it's not that I'm not claiming that it's easy for Evan Mobley right now, but he's playing with no expectations, no pressure on a team that's not expected to go anywhere. And
can I just say on Basketball Reference right now, did you know that the Cleveland Cavaliers they rank number one in the Eastern Conference to reach the finals in their projection system?
Well, I believe, schedule adjusted, Matt Moore, shout out to Matt Moore, who's always tweeting these stats out, but, like strength of schedule adjusted, I think the Cavs are, like, the best net rating in the East. They're really good. I just am like, can I see Evan Mobley play one playoff game before I'm, like, taking him over Andrew Wiggins, who's been really, really good this season also? That's all I'm saying. No shade at Evan Mobley.
Fair.
Totally fair.
He's there for me though. And a quick Jared Allen stat, cause I was looking through this and I was trying to figure out who he's like my favorite. I just love him so much. But did you know that he's averaging 10 shots a game, shooting 70.7%? Did you know no player in NBA history has ever averaged at least 10 shots a game and shot over 70% from the floor?
Wow.
What a stat.
I mean, good for him. Can I tell you a take of mine that's aged really poorly?
Yes. Please.
This wasn't even a take, but I remember floating this out to you before the season. And it wasn't I think if you go back and listen to it, I definitely was like, I'm just wondering, like I'm not necessarily saying it's insane. But at the time, I was like, yeah, I was a little surprised I was a little surprised that Jared Allen got a bigger contract than Duncan Robinson in the offseason. And lo and behold, Jared Allen's just been absolutely killing us. So shout out to the Cavs.
The Cavs are very good. I tweeted this, but watching the second quarter of their Saturday night game against the Sacramento Kings, that was the most dominant play I've ever seen one team over another, and one team lost by 73 points this season. So check that one out if you want to go back. Rohan, I know you love looking at the highlights. Go check that one out.
I will, like,
It was like almost literally 3 straight minutes of Jared Allen block.
I was going to say, there was a 90-second to 3-minute stretch where it was like big brother against little brother. Like 5 big brothers against 5 little brothers. It was disgusting.
Just incredible stuff. So a couple other players I have here, Gordon Hayward. And I don't know if he's the third best player on the Hornets, I think you got LaMelo, Bridges, Hayward in some type of order. Mm-hmm. I'd take all three, any of the three, over Wiggins. And the OG Anunoby, Scottie Barnes, Pascal Siakam, trifecta, I would take any of those three over Wiggins also. But not, it's not like some crazy margin, but that's...
I don't know.
Nikola Vucevic also is another third best player. And
I'm not taking Vuce over Wiggins right now.
Okay, that's fair.
Who are your three best players on the Raptors?
Fred VanVleet is one.
Okay.
I think clearly this season he's been tremendous. Two is, it's probably Scottie Barnes.
Interesting. You would take Scottie Barnes over Wiggins right now on a contender?
Well, okay, so if I'm just breaking it down, like Scottie Barnes, better passer, maybe better defender already. I'll say that. I just kind of look at it and I'm like, what area is Wiggins like definitively superior compared to Scottie Barnes? And I don't like Scottie Barnes hits threes. He can create his own shot. Like he'll bully ball you. I don't know. It's like I kind of just know what. Maybe it's just Wiggins fatigue. I don't know. Maybe I'm not being fair.
That's what I'm saying. Is I also think there's all these guys have talent there, but like if you were describing Wiggins 5 years ago at this stage of the career, like guys like Scott Barnes and Mobley are in, you might say the same things.
But, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so we're gonna close with this email from Ali who. Wrote this a few weeks ago, and we just haven't had a chance to get around to it, but I wanted to because it's a really interesting one. So Ali writes, "Hey guys, it's Ali from Detroit. First, let me just say I love the podcast. The chemistry that Michael has with the guests he brings on is great. Open Floor was by far my most listened to podcast on Spotify in 2021 and has been for the last couple of years. Now to my question. I've been following the NBA since around the early 2010s and have been an avid Pistons fan for the last 5 or 6 years. And in the last couple of years, it appears that I am experiencing my favorite team go through a full, true, top-to-bottom rebuild for the first time in my life. Ali, they are going through a rebuild of extensive proportions. Ali continues, I like to think we've done a pretty good job. Troy Weaver managed to retool our entire roster within a year and hit on some underrated draft picks in 2020, while last year's all-time great tank job landed us Cade Cunningham. But despite us seemingly getting better in the offseason, we're 4-23 and recently blew a 12-point lead in the fourth quarter to OKC, who just came off a 73-point loss. So my question is, should this team hit the panic button already? Or is it still way too early to make any assumptions? Is borderline unwatchable team basketball par for the course for a rebuilding team this young? Or are there some serious problems that Detroit needs fixed as soon as possible?" Really good email from Ali. I watched the Pistons Nets game last night, and Kevin Durant scored 51 points. James Harden didn't play. And first of all, like watching the Nets without Harden, and just like Kevin Durant just like doing everything. It's truly amazing. He's just an incredible player, but. I mean, my answer here is pretty short. Like, I don't. No, it's not. No, we're not hitting the panic button. This is supposed to happen.
Yeah, I'm not. Listen, Ali, shout out, man. You got your favorite team. I was surprised when Michael wanted to do this email. Just thought we'd both be on the same page. Which is, yeah, man. It's gonna take some time. It's Cade Cunningham's rookie year. Like, don't sweat it. I think coming by the end of next season, you're gonna want to see some positive stretches. Maybe like next. You know, February they go on a 4-game winning streak. Like that'll be great, but yeah, man, there's plenty of time before you need to worry about where this team is at.
I mean, I think they play hard.
Yes,
I think they've been in a bunch of games.
Yeah,
yeah. Cade, you know, his 3-point shooting numbers aren't great, but when you watch him play, you can tell he's just going to be a really good off-ball player as well as on-ball. Mm-hmm. Like he moves without the ball, drifts up the. Arc and is going to be a real spot up threat. So I think he's He's fantastic. He's going to be really good, even though there's been a little, it's been a little bumpy so far because of some health issues. But they're really physical. They're physical. They play hard. I actually like Killian Hayes. Mm-hmm. I want to see him and Cade play a little bit more together. Sadiq Bey, I really wish you were on the Celtics. That one just hurt me the moment that it happened. I didn't understand. I still don't. Big fan of his, even though he's going through a little bit of a slump, shooting slump. But yeah, I wanted to just touch on the Pistons because we don't talk. They're the worst team in the league, I think, by far, I would say. Would you agree with that?
I don't know that it's by far.
Shout out to the Orlando Magic.
I think the Magic and Thunder are in the mix.
Yeah, so it's, I mean, look, you're rebuilding. You're trying to get another blue chip player to build around with Cade. Maybe you will. That's awesome. So, like, I think the future's bright. And right now it's supposed to be terrible. And I personally feel for Dwayne Casey. He's one of the better dudes in the league. And this stinks for him. But, you know, it's good to get the rebuild, I guess, out of the way, get that top product. I mean, I'm sure that, honestly, to bring it a little bit full circle, like, Pacers fans are probably, I don't know if they're jealous of the Pistons. I'm not going to say they're jealous of the Pistons. But if you're a Pacers fan, you're like, I kind of wish that I had something to look forward to 3 years down the road. Like, having Cade Cunningham on your team is fun. Like, you get to grow with him, and I don't know. That's just, it's just kind of the how the NBA works, the rhythms of team building and all that. But yeah, shout out to the Pistons. Shout out to Cade Cunningham.
Yeah, it's going to be fine. It's going to be a long
Rohan, you're speechless here. I guess we'll never talk about the Pistons again.
I just, you know, this is, yeah, man, this is how it goes. This is how it goes. Like, your teams are going to be, I would push back on, like, I think the Pacers are just fine. I think it's good to, like, have a team that competes every night, and people should take more pride in that. I don't think that they should be aiming to be the Pistons. But, yeah, it's like Cade Cunningham's was the number one pick for a reason because that team was bad. And it's going to take some time. It'll be fine.
Okay. So on that note, we're going to hit the Rip City Royston report. We'll hit that next week. We got a lot to talk about with the Blazers. Hopefully Damian Lillard and hopefully CJ McCollum gets better soon. He has a partially collapsed lung. That sounds terrible. Anthony Simons just had a really big game, my guy, last night in a loss against the Timberwolves. So we'll check back in there, but I think that'll do it for today's show. Thank you, Rohan. Thank you to all of our listeners and all of our emailers. Keep them coming, please. Openfloormail@gmail.com. That's openfloormail@gmail.com. Everybody stay safe. Everybody please continue to enjoy the NBA season. Whoa.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details. How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.